Is your appetite sometimes out of control? Are you unable to stop eating even when you're full? Download our new Intelligent Medicine video, Defensive Eating, Taming Your Addiction to Food. There's a physiological basis for food addiction. The food industry has gripped our brains using powerful food science. Find out what we can do about it. Go to DearHoffman.com to download this important video. We will arm you with proven strategies to change your eating behavior forever. Go to DearHoffman.com. Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin. And before we get back to our questions, let me remind you that you can help to support this enterprise in a couple of ways. One, go to drhoffman.com and click on the store. There's a drop-down menu there, and you can find out about all the products that we talk about during these podcasts. And thereby, you can assure yourself of the best quality supplements, enhance your health, and also assure the continuity of these podcasts, which are free of charge. And in addition, Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin, our guest today, is available for consultation. So check out drhoffman.com, find out about it. And if you are a listener in another part of the country, you can still avail yourself of her services. She does consultations by telephone. You have a sort of a growing national constituency, right? You've got patients in various parts of the country now.
Yeah. It's wonderful. I love being a collaborator in people's healthcare.
Indeed.
Great job I have.
Right. Yeah. Doesn't get any better than that. All right, so let's tackle questions. We have a question about carrageenan.
Yes. Yes. Dr. Mike, who's a chiropractor, writes, "Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, thank you for all the knowledge you pass on. It's life-changing. You're very, very welcome, Mike. What is the downside of carrageenan or carrageenan? I tell my patients to substitute almond milk for dairy milk, but I've noticed it contains carrageenan. I believe it's also in rice and soy and coconut milk. Is there anything to be concerned about? Seems like every time you look closely, there's something bad and something good."
Right.
Looking forward to your answer. I actually talked about carrageenan at length in one of my podcasts. Here's the thing. There's denatured and undenatured carrageenan. One is food grade, one is non-food grade. And what they found in the scientific research is that, especially intestine rats, they found that it causes some inflammation in the intestines. Now, anecdotally, if you go to cornucopia.org, they've done their own. Anecdotally, they've had people stop taking carrageenan-containing products, and lo and behold, their symptoms either diminished, vanished entirely, or they felt better in other ways. So, which is all very interesting. Food-grade carrageenan tends to generally be okay. However, tread very carefully here. It can be contaminated with some non-food grade carrageenan, about 5% maybe. But anybody with a sensitive gut or GI issues or anything like that should probably avoid carrageenan.
I would agree with that assessment.
So,
here's the deal. I think, carrageenan has become another one of those things like high fructose corn syrup. Where, it's important to be on the lookout for the possible downsides, or titanium dioxide. That's another one, which is often used as a food colorant. But it kind of depends. In the case of titanium dioxide, it matters more if it's in nanospheres versus just a really powdered form. For patients who have ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease, we absolutely forbid them to take carrageenan or titanium dioxide because these are irritants. Now, I believe that people with normal GI tracts, and it's hard to know these days who still has a normal GI tract, can tolerate moderate amounts of carrageenan. It's probably okay. However, how I actually found out about carrageenan in the first place?
How?
I was reading about the harmful effects of cosmetics. Cosmetics are irritants to the skin. And then I was reading about how certain things, like certain topical applications like vitamin E may protect against inflammation. And so in the experiments in the cosmetic industry, where they try to establish whether a cosmetic is safe to be put on irritated skin, how do they test that? Well, they don't take humans. They do animal testing. And, you know, like it or not, that's what they do. You know, for many of you out there, this seems unduly cruel to subject animals to these experiments. But this is the way they test out ingredients. And even worse, that humans should be exposed without any kind of testing to potentially harmful ingredients. Maybe there's a better way to test than to subject poor animals to this. But what they do is they deliberately create inflammation in an animal model. And the animal model that they've have selected for testing cosmetics is the rat paw assay. And how do they create an inflamed rat paw? They take a rat and they inject carrageenan into their foot pad, and that creates inflammation. And what that suggests to me is that, you know, maybe, just maybe, the carrageenan applied externally to intact skin or to an intact GI tract, it might be tolerated. But once it gets in and it breaches the wall of the gastrointestinal tract, that's where it can cause trouble. And that would be in patients who have leaky gut syndrome or actually have literally Swiss cheese holes in their gastrointestinal tract that you can see on colonoscopy. That you don't want to apply, or, you know, patients with ulcers, you really don't want to apply carrageenan directly to a wound, in effect, because then it's going to maybe get in there and worsen the inflammation. So, you know, and what is carrageenan? Why is it there? It's an ingredient that gives mouthfeel to some of these products, because otherwise these products would be sort of watery, and you want it to have that kind of luscious, creamy texture. And carrageenan is derived from seaweed, and it has kind of that effect as a texturizing ingredient, and it's used very extensively.
Texturizing, emulsifying. So for Dr. Mike, for your sensitive patients, probably not recommended.
Layla, what's your take on almond milk, rice milk, and many of these milk alternative products? Do we recommend those to patients? Or, you know, like, say a patient is dairy sensitive and doesn't want to take dairy. Are you a fan of those?
If they're dairy sensitive and they use milk, I'll recommend almond milk, maybe rice milk, as long as they're not carbohydrate sensitive. In appropriate individuals, I would even say soy milk.
Right.
Coconut milk or something like that. And that's okay.
See, what I frequently get is like, oh my God, I can't have milk. What do I put on my cereal?
Yeah.
And then I go, you know, maybe that's not the best breakfast in the first place, is like some dry cereal, right? Right?
You know, so I'll tell you, I'm not a fan of any of the milks.
Right.
At all. Yeah. I don't think we should be drinking them.
Yeah. You know? What do you say? You mean the substitute milks, you know, hemp milk?
The substitute milks even.
Yeah, yeah. Right, right.
The substitute milks, right, right.
Because they're not that natural.
We don't want to be drinking our calories,
Right. That's number one, because they're calorically pretty calorie dense. And also, they are kind of artificial, right? Because it's one thing to eat almonds with the fiber and the oils and the fats and everything intact, and another to take a refined product made from almonds. The same thing with soy milk, you know, maybe some edamame for some people who don't have a problem with soy.
Right.
But, you know, drinking, guzzling soy milk may not be the best. It's a little unnatural. It's a refined food.
Yeah. And it's GMO. Most of it is GMO.
Exactly.
I might even say all of it, so you'd have to look for non-GMO. I think the only...
And they can't even label it as such. They can't even label it as such.
Yeah. They can't even label it, which is terrible. Yeah.
By the way, this week we just saw the approval of the frankenfish, the GMO salmon, which looks like a Jugundo salmon, and it's great, you know, for productivity. But what in the heck is that going to do to people once they eat it? We don't even know. It hasn't really been tested on people. Basically, the testing was to make sure it didn't mess up other fish.
But, oh my goodness! Yeah.
And they're going to prohibit labeling of it. There won't be any way to tell. So I may have to change the salmon and salad diet to the frankenfish and salad diet. Right?
Oh, no.
I have to stop advocating. They're going to ruin my diet.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to sue the government.
There you go.
They're stealing my livelihood by contaminating my salmon. Oh man,
it's terrible. Yeah, we'll see what becomes of that. But thank you, Dr. Mike, for your question, and thank you for listening.
Yep. Yeah, we're always happy when health professionals find us a useful resource.
Yeah. Our next question is from Carol. Dr. Hoffman, is there any medication to help prevent or relieve canker sores in the mouth and throat?
Mm-hmm.
Canker sores typically happen in people with gluten sensitivity.
Mm-hmm. Or other allergies. It could be other allergies,
other
too.
Other allergies, yeah. Too, mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I find that nut allergy and sometimes citrus allergy can be a trigger often. And foods that are high in arginine may trigger it because it is actually sometimes associated with the oral herpes virus.
But I think it's different, is it?
Yeah, it depends. It depends. I mean, sometimes it's an allergic manifestation. Sometimes it's a viral thing. And... Mm-hmm. One of the best treatments for that is DGL, DGL lozenges.
Yeah.
DGL is a soothing agent for stomach ulcers, and it's also helpful for mouth ulcers. So, get yourself a bottle of DGL and, suck on, you can do 10, 12, 15 lozenges a day. Knock yourself out. It's not only soothing, but it also promotes healing. It can be helpful. And in the past, we were able to get something called glycyrrhizin, which is an even more pure extract of licorice, even more anti-inflammatory. But I think nowadays it's a little harder to get because you have to be careful with it. It can increase your sodium and deplete your potassium and raise your blood pressure.
Yeah. If arginine is a problem for the canker sores or if this is viral, high arginine-containing foods that you should eliminate to prevent more canker sores would be corn, Brussels sprouts, chocolate, sorry everybody, and nuts. Nuts have a lot of arginine too. Or take at least equal amounts of lysine or more lysine to help counterbalance. And lysine's good for the immune system. Anyway, yeah. And certainly if you have a canker sore, citrus hurts.
Yeah. Right.
All right. Carol, thank you for your question. Okay. We've got a question from Jane. A dermatologist surgeon recommended taking nicotinamide to protect against non-melanoma skin cancer.
Wow, very cool.
Especially for a person who is prone to basal cell carcinoma and squamous cell cancer.
Yep.
Available information on this vitamin seems to equate it with niacinamide.
Mm-hmm.
But there is confusion. Are they the same?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, they're the same. So what they're referring to is a study that actually was in the New England Journal of Medicine recently, and I talked about it even before that study appeared, which is research that shows that vitamin B3, but not the niacin, which is the flushing kind, niacinamide, which is better tolerated, less likely to cause liver problems, at a dose of 500 milligrams twice daily, reduced the rate of recurrence of basal cell and squamous cell skin cancer. It didn't eliminate it, but it was very interesting. It really reduced by about a third, or in some cases 40-50%, the incidence of skin cancer. So, that combined with, and I wrote an article about this, I think it was earlier this summer, for the summer months, things you can use to prevent skin cancer with, that was number one, but there are also other things like EGCG, green tea, and there are studies on other nutrients that seem to show that they reduce the likelihood that sun exposure is going to trigger cancer. So, if you're someone who goes to the dermatologist every 6 months and it's like peeling barnacles off the ship, ship's hull, and you're getting, tired of those Mohs procedures, maybe, just maybe, you should be taking 500 milligrams of niacinamide or nicotinamide twice daily. That's not to be confused with nicotinamide riboside, which is a different nutrient altogether. That's something that can be helpful for neurological diseases, tinnitus. It's a mitochondrial nutrient. So, there you have it. I mean, the research is pretty clear, very dramatic in a mainstream medical journal that this really can work. And I'm glad that the dermatologists are adopting this. You know, dermatology used to be a field where, you know, they never talked about nutrition, and they should be talking about essential fatty acids and GLA, the effects of diet on, you know, allergic skin conditions like eczema, you know, sugar's effect on likelihood of getting
acne.
You know, but now they've got to sit up and pay attention when it's in the New England Journal of Medicine. We have time for one more question.
We have time for one more question. Thank you for your question, Jane. This comes from Mark. My 83-year-old father has some aneurysms that they don't want to touch right now in his stomach. Is there anything he can take? How about ubiquinol?
Well, you know, here's what I would say is, to be honest, an aneurysm is a thinning out or ballooning out of the tissue in an artery. And it can be in the brain. That's very dangerous because it can burst, or it can be in the aorta, and it can cause something called AAA, aortic abdominal aneurysm, which is catastrophic and often fatal, and or, you know, other places. And it's a stretching out, so it's not really that amenable to nutrients, in my opinion. However, you know, the strategy for dealing with aneurysms that you don't want to operate on is to keep the blood pressure well controlled, because you don't want high blood pressure to cause excessive stretching of that aneurysm and cause it to stretch and stretch and stretch to the point where it's likely to break down. So, you know, aneurysms, I think, are not to be treated nutritionally. They're to be prevented nutritionally. And once you have an aneurysm, I think, you know, you need proper medical care and or surgery. And, you know, 83-year-olds are not the greatest candidate for extensive abdominal surgery. So they're figuring, leave well enough alone.
Oh, best of luck with your father, Mark, and thank you for your question.
Yeah, we do get that question from time to time. What can you take for aneurysms? And, you know, it's kind of like, what do you do with a sock that's been stretched, you know, overstretched, stretched out of shape? Is there some kind of...
You get new socks.
I mean, so there's not like some kind of, you know, detergent additive or something that you can use to make your sock go back to normal size, right? So
maybe wash it in hot water. I don't know.
Yeah, but you can't do that with your aneurysm.
No.
Okay. So, all right. So that concludes our questions for this week. And as we head into the busy holiday season, we hope that you keep listening and use Intelligent Medicine as a way to kind of a little counterbalance to the usual holiday stress. Take some time, chill out, relax, listen in your car or listen at home, and get some useful health information and inspiration during this busy holiday season. We'll keep churning out the information, sending it your way. So be sure to subscribe to our newsletter and follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and keep listening to our Intelligent Medicine podcast. Thanks very much for joining us. On behalf of myself and Layla Mutin, Layla, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Dr. Hoffman. Thank you, everybody.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine podcast.
This is Layla Mutin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me, but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.